This is a man that needs no introduction.
Who is this guy?
The most knowledgeable columnist in the city of Pittsburgh.
Some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey.
He goes by only one name.
Hotter than Bond, cooler than Bullet. Shaft.
No, it's not Shaft. It's Rossi. And he's here right now on Trip Live Radio.
For about three quarters, it was worthwhile listening to this song this weekend. Yeah. And the last play of the third quarter happened, and the fit hit the sham with your West Virginia Mountaineers.
It was a classic West Virginia loss in the Big 12. You had just enough hope to have it snatched away from you. So,
Rob Rossi from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, Guy Junker, Tim Benz, Josh Taylor joins us in the third hour, as he always does. No Ken today. Ken is off. What's harder, Rob, to write a column that rips Sidney Crosby or one that praises Bob Nutting in this town?
I don't find either of them hard. It'd be interesting to ask.
Where do you get the most negative reactions? Something positive about the Pirate owner or something negative about the Penguin superstar?
You know, it's funny. The negative reaction to the Bob Nutting stuff has almost exclusively come from what I believe are Penguin fans.
Interesting.
Because I think they just...
What happens when he buys them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's perceived as a shot at other people, but, you know, I talked on the field with Bob yesterday, and I understand the gripes that a lot of people have, but I also think there's a lot of facts that we let slip through. And I don't believe that there are things we can ignore. And one of the big things we shouldn't ignore is that this isn't as easy to do what the Pirates are doing as it is in hockey or football, because that salary cap situation is real. Now, do I agree it's only Bob Nutting's money and the fans shouldn't care about it? Yes, I agree. I mean, but that is a real thing. Like, the Penguins have a capped sport. The Steelers have a capped sport. That does level the playing field to the point where if you have smart management, you can do things. Whereas that isn't the case in baseball. Teams can't just spend money. And there are a lot of things that teams in baseball have done that the Pirates have had started, if not doing first, started doing differently or better. One of them is the defensive shifting. The other was the investment in things that weren't payroll. I mean, and that's why I pointed out the Cubs. If you look at what the Cubs have spent on payroll this year and think that's the only reason they've won, then you're missing the point. Because look at what they spent on infrastructure. Look at what they spent on facilities. Now, the Pirates are doing all that. The Pirates have been doing all that. Now, they haven't been spending as much. But they did sort of become one of those teams that 5 years ago got way ahead of putting the money that you are going to spend in places that weren't just payroll.
And to the point of having even some of the drafting rules changed because of their shenanigans.
And if you look at teams like the Houston Astros and how much they use that sort of defensive shifting philosophy, you know, they use that primarily because they saw the success the Pirates started having with it 3 years ago. So you can't not give Nutting credit for hiring the people that did that stuff, that put that stuff into place. And you can't not give Nutting credit for, after the first, you know, three or four years of taking control of what was by all accounts a moribund franchise, they started to turn it around. And I do feel like the one thing that Nutting gets tagged with that isn't fair is all 20 years, because they weren't all under him. And if you look at the Lemieux-Burkle ownership or even the Rooney ownership dating back to when the Steelers started, they all struggled too. They all struggled to figure out how to sort of become successful owners. And the Steelers and the Penguins' second great era, which we've seen recently, all happened at a time when their leagues were dealing with a salary cap. If the Pirates are at the beginning of one, it isn't at a time when there's a salary cap. And you can't kill the owner for everything when things are going well. And I do think Pirate fans do want to do that sometimes.
Two things about Nutting. And I looked at him as kind of a, you know, a rich newspaper guy that took over this team, that ran it strictly as a business, that didn't have a competitive heartbeat unless he was looking at the bottom line. And a couple things that have changed my mind about him. One, he always said that, we're not just going to spend money to get a little bit better. We'll spend, if we're ever contending in August, when they wanted to get more no a couple of years ago, it was way over budget. They had already gone beyond what they wanted to payroll-wise. Neil Huntington went to him and says, I got a chance to get more no, but it's going to be way over what we wanted to spend. He says, if you think he's the guy that takes us over the top, get him. The second thing, and this may be, this seemed like a tiny little thing on a spring morning in Bradenton this year. He had formally talked to the media around that new training facility out there at Pirate City, which is beautiful,
yeah.
The weight room and everything. Once the camera's off, we're just standing there BS, and he says, I came in here the first year and looked around out here, and I said, oh, my God, we either got to get out or we got to get it right, which I never heard him so, I always thought this was sort of like a rich boy's play thing, and I don't think
I
that
asked,
anymore.
I asked Neil Huntington this yesterday, and I said, is your owner oblivious, or does he just not care about the criticism? And he said, I think it's become fashionable to think one of those things. This is Neil saying. He goes, but the truth is, he goes, he cares a lot. He just doesn't choose to let you guys see it, which isn't different from any other owner in town, by the way. I think part of the problem is the stuff that the Pirates have spent money on, fans, for the most part, don't get to see.
As in players.
Yeah, I mean, but, when you look at some of the things he's done, I think investing in Latin America and trying to reconnect what should be a very natural bond between the Latin American community and the Pirates, given Clemente, I think that was a smart move. I think investing money down into the complex down at Pirate City and turning that into something that is now top line as opposed to what was, basically a little
like a 1960 motel.
Yeah. I do point out, and I know people hate this.
Just Clemente, Rob. They were in the forefront of recruiting Latin American players, and a lot of that was a basis for their success in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. So you're right, but specifically because of Clemente.
Right.
But I just feel like for some reason there is this willingness to sort of overlook anything that he's done good because there's been 20 years and that's all on him. But I keep going back to this. He did not assume control until 2007. I covered the team the last year of the McClatchy era. Disastrous doesn't begin to describe. I mean, we forget how bad it was, right, Tim? I mean, we forget how
bad. Oh, I don't.
You don't. I mean,
I remember.
But people do. And it wasn't just bad on the field. I mean, it was bad. They had nothing. They had nothing in the system coming. I mean, they literally had to retool this whole thing. And they have to when they retool a baseball franchise, they have to retool six or seven teams sometimes, not, just two.
Well, all this is good about Nutting, where I think it might come into being a question again and how the fans may react negatively is, in the future, not every Jay Happ is going to work out. Not every Francisco Cervelli acquisition is going to work out. There's only going to be so many Edison Volquezes and only so many Francisco Lirianos. You can't keep doing it over and over again this way and be as successful as they have to the point that they're getting into the wild card round at least every single year. Especially if you're going to blow up your infield and you're going to say goodbye to Alvarez, you're going to say goodbye to Walker, you're going to say goodbye to Aramis Ramirez, you're not going to have Jung Ho Gung to start next year.
If the payroll is not going into next year what it was at the end of this year, which is, $98 million, then I think it's fair to – if we're talking two or three, but, if we're talking like $15 million less – after they drew a record-setting attendance this year because they didn't do things like suitably address needs, yes, I agree with you. But if they get back up to close to $100 million going into next season, which, remember, they added about $10 million in payroll during the season, I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Is that 25-man or 40-man roster?
That's for 33 players, so yeah.
Okay.
If they beat the Cubs and they get to game one of the DS – you might start next season with your opening day roster not having, from the NLDS, your game one starter in J-Hap, your first baseman in Pedro Alvarez, your second baseman in Neil Walker, and a guy who helped get you into this position in Jung Ho Gung because of injury.
Okay, I get that. But
and A.J. Burnett.
And A.J. Burnett.
Okay, but what I'm saying is the Neil Walker thing is probably more a baseball decision by the baseball people than anything Bob Nutting's doing, okay? They don't want to pay him They're baseball people. They don't want to pay him significant money long-term because they don't feel he'll be that type of player given his age, okay? The Pedro Alvarez thing may be a case of you've been trying to deal him for 2 years, okay? And now he's at least shown he can hit with power again. So maybe now is the time you can get something for him. This is not that different than a lot of baseball teams do, which is try to sort of figure out who's your core and who you're going to move on from and how you use those guys you're going to move on from to get something back. But I agree. You know, if they don't sign up, you know, if they want to sign Happ and they don't, and it becomes because of a couple million dollars, then yes, that's great. But let's let that happen first. I mean, we also need to remember that last year we all thought they were losing everybody. And yeah. They kept Liriano, and by all accounts, and I know, see, people don't believe this. If the Penguins come out and say, hey, we made a real play after this guy, you know, we really went after this guy in free agency, everybody believes it.
Like Parisi.
Yeah, but when the Pirates go after, I mean, by all accounts, and I've talked to Russell Martin and his people about this, when it's legitimate discussions to the point where the Pirates were in it up until Toronto said, we're getting him and we're going to blow the world away, okay? Then you have to figure out something. They were at least prepared. The idea that he hired the smartest baseball management team with Neil Huntington and those guys isn't so far stretched when you think about what they've done. And again, I'll just point this out. Pirates drew 2.49 million people this year, right? Which is great. It's an all-time attendance record. Look at where that compares to where they're in their division.
Yeah.
Like that is a real reality. You know, they had 81% capacity this year, and they're still last in the division in average attendance. You know, it's a real reality. So I'm just saying, let's not kill the guy. And
I'm not killing him for something he hasn't done yet, but I'm worried about the dawn that comes up on the day where what has worked nicely now for a five-year run, this five-year, you know, 2 years of incremental progress and then 3 years of success, that's pretty good for a smaller market team. And when just because you're going to keep Gerrit Cole maybe for the next couple of years doesn't mean the pieces around him aren't going to be.
Let me ask you this. If they do nothing else this summer, except if they move all these guys, but they figure out a way to keep Gerrit Cole and basically sign him to a contract through the rest of his arbitration, okay, which is essentially what they've done with some of these other guys, and give themselves an option. If they do that, should that be considered successful?
No, show me what you're doing to replace the power that you're losing.
Okay, well, I mean, like, but they have to make other moves to do that. Like, I mean, you know, we're all assuming that they're definitely getting rid of Pedro Alvarez and definitely getting rid of Neil Walker. I don't know that they won't keep Pedro now for a year and just say, hey, you know, we'll see where it goes.
With Gong being hurt, I could see them starting next year with both, and they'll work something out as time goes on.
That, to me, would be as much of a sign of what you're talking about as them going out and getting new guys or playing big in the free agent market. They're at least committed to the dollars that they are committed to with these guys.
I think if they don't come back with a similar payroll, that's fair to be really critical of them. But
just to go back to your point, I wanted to look it up because I wanted to look this up today anyway. Only Cincinnati is averaging less people a game than the Pirates in the division. They're 15th in Major League Baseball.
And
right?
Cincinnati's been starting an all-rookie
64 straight games.
And that's not a criticism of Pirate fans who I work with.
The Cardinals are two, the Cubs are six.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the kind of money and that's the kind of attendance.
And look at the television deals and everything else. So, I just feel like the guy just can't win for winning anymore. You know, it's different. I don't understand why the fan bases are so forgiving of the other owners when they screw up and Bob Nutting screws up once. And it's like...
longer history of doing so.
But he doesn't. He didn't raise the prices in 2002 after they, you know, lost 100 games in their new ballpark. He didn't, you know, hire Dave Littlefield.
When did he come in? When was his money in there, though?
He was a minority partner.
Minority partner.
But, majority in 2007,
that would be like,
right?
That would be like blaming Tull or Cintrone for anything the Steelers do. That would be like blaming... any of the Lemieux partner groups for anything Lemieux and Burkle decide. You know, they have money in. They didn't make the call. I mean, Nutting didn't start making the call until 2007. That's all I'm saying. I mean, that's just a fact that people want to overlook. You know, once they
started, 8 years ago, and 5 of those 8 years, they've been in contention at least till August.
Well, look, you got to prove it over the long haul. But, I mean, let's face it. Weren't the Penguins a disastrous franchise before the NHL had a salary cap for those 5 years?
Yes.
I mean, they were terrible.
Yeah.
They completely bottomed out to the point where if they don't win a lottery, they're gone. You know, they're probably gone. Even Bettman at that point, for all of his ability to keep them here, would have probably had to say, look, you're not, it's just not going to work.
Well, since you brought up the Penguins, I wanted to get to them too, with the roster being set now and Sprong making the team. We're going to hear from him in a little bit. How sincere of a, are they just giving him a look just to see what he has? I mean, is there a real reason to have him here aside from their own curiosity? Is part of the reason he's here maybe because another move is in the works for either Bennett or Perron or both?
I would think it would be very tough to pay David Perron for $5 million or whatever they're paying him.
He's 3.8.
3.8, yeah, $3.8 million to be a fourth-line winger. At some point, the Penguins have to get younger up front and see if they have a salary cap that can be manipulated more favorably because they're going to be playing younger guys. They've done that somewhat on defense. They need to be able to do that up front where they have a lot of money allocated to very few players. So I would think if you see from Pascal Dupuis that this is going to work and you see enough from Sprung to think maybe he can go be your fourth line guy, then yeah, there's probably a move in the works. I have heard that Jim Rutherford has been working the phone, seeing what the market is for David Perron. I think in an ideal world, you know, Perron would get off to a fast start and the Penguins could flip him, you know, maybe flip him for some help on the defense because this defense has the potential to be the worst defense core they've had of the Crosby Malkin era. I mean, other than the top, you know, other than Letang and Mata, you have to really want to believe in the Penguins' way of evaluating defensemen and developing defensemen to like anything that they have.
Other than Letang and Mata, I don't know how you feel about it, Guy, but other than Letang and Mata, I look at the other six guys that are going to be there for four spots, and I think to myself, oh, you know, if one of those guys was part of a bottom six pairing,
yeah,
I'm okay with it. The problem is all four of them fit that description.
Yeah, I like Cole in the short sample we had saw of him last year. How big of a disappointment is it Pouliot didn't have a better camp? I mean, is that a correctable thing?
I don't think anybody in that organization outside of Mike Johnston who has evaluated Derek Pouliot honestly is surprised or disappointed. He is much closer to being a never-will-be than he is a definite will be. Because his defensive tendencies, yes. I mean, his liability as a defenseman for being a defenseman, it's not something we've seen a lot of. I mean, he's
like Letang when he first started? Or
No. Here's the thing about Chris when he first started. Chris was an offensive defenseman trying to play too defensive because he knew the knocks on him, right? It wasn't until Chris really said, you know what, forget it. I'm going to play my game and see how it develops. That, you know, when you saw Chris, like, I'll put it this way. Chris, when he started on defense, is Nick Lidstrom compared to where Derek Pouliot is. I mean, Derek Pouliot has Paul Coffey's approach to the defensive side of the game with none of the Paul Coffey.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a brilliant offensive player, and he might be the one guy in the organization that could run a power play. That's the tragedy of this, because I mean, let's face it, Gonchar was in camp for two reasons. One, they knew that they have a vacuum of leadership in that dressing room, and that part of their problem perhaps was that, not perhaps, that they could be facing a powder keg of a situation with, if they don't give Gonchar a chance to make this team, Malkin's going to lose his mind. Okay. The other part was,
well, from what you know from Gino, or how you know Gino, is he all right with the decision that they
made?
Yeah,
because here's the thing. Yeah, look, Gino's not.
Did Gino see what we all saw, which is this guy can't do it from
the blue
line
back? Yeah, and
here's
the thing. I think the thing about Gino is one of the reasons Sergei wanted to come to Pittsburgh was he wanted to be able to make this decision honestly. And, you know, you need to be surrounded by people that you feel have your back when you're trying to make an honest decision, right? You don't want just strangers. And, you know, Evgeny Malkin and he are brotherly, and I know they've had conversations about this. And I do think Sergei is considering seriously, based off, you know, interacting with him and Gino on Saturday, taking a role within the organization. I just think it takes time for a guy to sort of decide it's over. But my point is this. I don't think the Gino problem is a problem for two reasons. One, eventually Mike Johnston will come to the realization that any sane human will, which is that just because Sidney Crosby once Phil Kessel doesn't mean that's the best thing for the team, okay? and that the best thing for the team will eventually be Phil Kessel and Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby making it work with
Patrick Hornqvist.
Two, the other reason Sergei Gonchar was in here, aside from the leadership Geno dynamic, was they looked at their power play and said, we have all the talent in the world, but the problem is we don't have anybody who can get anybody the puck. Okay? And for all of Chris Letang's talents, that's never been his skill. And they have a power play that you look at and go, man, that should be a 30% power play. The problem with that is who's going to distribute the passes, right? Who's going to make the plays to get the puck to Crosby, Malkin, whoever? Kessel. I don't know who does that on this team. I still think Olli Maatta could become that guy, but not yet. And, you know, you look at this defense corps, you're right, Tim. They have a bunch of numbers.
If Pouliot could improve enough defensively, he could be
Pouliot could have been that guy, because Pouliot's got the type of attitude on the power play that you need. It's my puck. I don't care who you are, you know?
Rob, thanks. Appreciate it. Good talking to you again.
All right, take care, guys.
Rob Rossi brought to us by Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. See all the weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And
Rob brought to us by a beer distributor. Who would have thought?
He's got to drink a lot to forget about what happened in the fourth quarter of that West Virginia game. See all the weekly specials at duffysbeer.com and get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Let's get to that Daniel Sprung interview, because there's a couple points I wanted to follow up on as it related to the Penguins. Like I said, we're getting some Penguin emails in. You can get yours in too. sportstalk@tribweb.com. Here's what Sprung had to say about making the team. This is from Penguins.com.
Yeah, it's a pretty good feeling. I was pretty happy to get the call and get the good news, so I'm happy here, but it's not over yet. I still got to keep earning my spot and keep playing well. When I got drafted, the first thing I thought to myself is I got to prove that I wasn't that low of a pick. I was very disappointed, of course, that I didn't end up going to the first, but when Pittsburgh called my name, that got away, and I just wanted to prove Pittsburgh right, that they picked the right guy, and I want to show them that I can play in the NHL as soon as possible. And I was coming here in development camp, I kind of saw what kind of system they wanted to play and what the life was like. And when I came back, I knew what kind of game I had to play. I knew the roster was going to be very hard to make. Again, I was thinking about going back to junior for sure and just trying to get experience here as much as I can. But the second I started playing more games, I felt more and more comfortable, and I thought I could really play here this year if I get an opportunity, and I'm very happy I did.
So you sort of switched from training camp to regular season practices. Do you look at anything differently? Do you have to approach practices any differently, anything at all?
No, I don't think so. I remember when I was 16 going to my first junior year training camp, same thing, and then I could walk in the room, and the youngest guy there, and same thing here, youngest guy here. I just know I have to keep working hard and just keep earning my spot, because you never know. And in NHL, it's a business, and one bad game means you can stay in the stands for a while, but just got to keep working hard and keep proving that you belong in the lineup. No, not really. I'm just going to enjoy it. After 9 games, I'm going to see what happens. If I stay, it's great, and continue what I've been doing here. And if I get sent down, it's not really on my mind right now. I know the first step was done, that I made the team, and now I just got to keep working hard to stay in the lineup.
It is odd, Guy, to think about having Sprong and Perron on a fourth line with Matt Cullen. You hear Matt Cullen, you think face-offs, be responsible in your own end, prevent one of the other team's top two lines from scoring every time they're on the ice. Sprong and Perron suggest to me you want to score with your fourth line. So entertain me on this for just a second. How theoretical is it, especially in a game that doesn't have a hell of a lot of power play time, that you double shift Geno or Sid a few times per period between those two guys, Sprong and Perron? Give the two top line centers a few extra minutes, a few extra shifts, and try to set up those two wingers.
I hadn't really thought of that. I think it's a brilliant idea. I mean, I said last week, I don't look at Sprong playing on the fourth line the same way I would Bo Bennett. Bo Bennett's further along in his career. We've seen him play in NHL games. By and large, he's been a disappointment, and I think you've got to make a decision on him. If Sprung gets his feet wet at all for 9 games, I don't care if he's killing penalties, you get a little chance to see what he's like in an NHL situation. Maybe he Jordan stalls it and sticks. Maybe you get a look at him and think, we could trust bringing him up later in the year if we do need somebody. So I don't mind who he plays with or the fact that they're keeping him here. But that seems like you got a young guy that I'm sure is going to be full of piss and vinegar trying to impress. You've got an old, calm hunting dog on the porch that will lay there unless a bear comes up. And then you got another guy that's a total disappointment, and they're already making phone calls to get rid of it. It's not, I don't think it's a great mixture.
And hey, we all know these are the Pittsburgh Penguins. There'll be a severe case of MRSA that will take out four players on opening night, and then there'll be somebody else that breaks a leg and is out for 3 months. That's how it works with this team. We've gotten used to it. So it's a little bit of conjecture and maybe conversation for conversation's sake right now, because I'm sure whether it's Sprong or Perron or Bennett or one of these other guys that's allegedly a scoring type of player that's been bumped down to the third, fourth line, Pascal Dupuis, I bet you one of those guys finds themselves in a top two line role very quickly because of injury early on in the season. It's just the nature of that locker room. It happens all the time. So in theory, I float this out there about double shifting the centers a couple times per game, each of them. And I don't know, maybe even throw Benito in there, whatever, but definitely Malkin and Crosby. It gets them a little bit more ice time, and it gets your other team, you know, your opponent, off of what they're trying to do to play matchup hockey with their defensemen and their other lines. And those are two capable guys who can score if they've got a good centerman lining them up. And then if you need more of Matt Cullen later, this is all before Fair comes back, of course, but you know, maybe you can rely on Matt Cullen later if you are up 4-2 to take some more draws and have some more ice time than what you would suggest his body would allow at his advanced age.
I think it's a great idea. I haven't been able to watch as much Penguin preseason as I normally would have. The Steelers playing all these primetime games to start, already two Thursdays and now a Monday, and my schedule's been kind of off, and with the Pirates coming down the stretch and everything else, it hasn't been it, but I like what I've seen from Plotnikov, and I think you can expect Kunitz and Dupree to play pretty well. I mean, as long as they stay healthy, I think they look like they're not ready for the cow pasture yet. So I think the bottom, whoever mixes in this bottom end of the roster, especially when Eric Fair gets healthy, I think they've succeeded in building up the bottom six, which I think is one of the big reasons they've farted out in the playoffs in recent years. The top guys, there's so much concentration based on keeping Sidney Crosby and Malkin. And look, if you're Crosby and Malkin, you've got to do more than you've done in the last couple of years. But when you think of having a Jordan Staal or having a third or a fourth, look at it, teams that win the cup or go far, you got to have at least three lines you can count on and play regularly. A really good team might even have a fourth line that they're not afraid to put out there. But and they've only had two. So I think up front, they've, as I've seen preseason, they've accomplished the fact that their bottom six forwards are going to be better than they have been in the last couple of years, and if they can just survive defensively, I'm cautiously optimistic. When last year ended, I thought this team was kind of heading in a spiral. I think that the addition of Kessel and some of the other moves that he made, even though the defense is a little bit weaker, has me more interested than I thought I would be when that Rangers series ended.
Think about scoring on the power play and then being able to come back with one of those two centers, give the other guy a rest, keep the other guy on the ice, and then put Perron and Sprong back out there. You've just scored on the power play. Now you got a chance for another goal.
Yeah.
Or if they split the power play, as people keep wanting them to do, and even though they probably won't, but if they split the power play and you don't have Sid and Gino on the ice together, whichever guy was on the bench when the goal was scored, you can jump all over that team and get two quickies potentially.
They could be like Erie and those guys were when Scotty Bowman coached. Penguins would score a goal, places going nuts. Instead of keeping Lemieux and company out there, who were as likely to make again, you know, have one scored against, he'd put that line out there because they would settle things down, but also had the ability to pop one in too.
When we come back, I will get to your Penguin emails. Send them along, sportstalk@tribweb.com. We will hear from Jay Happ before the top of the hour too, and I got a comparison that is a little dusty, admittedly, because I'm getting to that age where I can do those kind of comparisons, but I think it really resonates based on how
I saw Christy Mathewson pitch.
Not that dusty.
A.J. Burnett passed him up.
It feels that way, but not quite that dusty. We'll do that when we come back. And for Pirate fans from the 90s, you'll like this. I'll
get some other interesting attendance numbers here, too.
Oh, Rob gets you thinking about that?
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that as well before we hit noon on Trib Live with Guy Junker, Tim Benz, and Josh Taylor at the top of the hour. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our specials at duffysbeer.com. Duffy's has an amazing selection of craft and local beers, including some hard-to-find brews. They're also fully stocked on the supplies you need to make your own craft brew, over 40 varieties of hops and grains as well, and 30 varieties of yeast. Whether you're just starting out or you're an experienced brewer, Duffy's has you covered. Duffy's Beer and much more. Online at duffysbeer.com.